Are you ready to make the most of your oil and gas mineral rights? Welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. Get the knowledge and resources you need to manage your minerals and royalties. Here is your host, Matt Sands.
Hello and welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Sands, and I'm here to help you make the most of your mineral rights and royalties. And Justin Williams joins me as always. Hey, Justin.
Hey, good morning, Matt.
Good morning. And today we're going to cover mineral rights news for May 2021. And, you know, before we hit record, Justin, we were talking about these stories and wow, they're really some good stories this month.
They are very interesting stories. Some of them alarming, some of them definitely pretty interesting.
Pretty interesting. But before we dive in, Justin, do you want to go through the shout outs? We've been sort of behind on giving shout outs to listeners that have left a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. So let's go ahead and get caught up now.
Let's do it. So our first one here is from Liam Leahy. Super helpful and informative. Matt Sands is a great host who clearly has a lot of knowledge of this field. Thank you, Liam. We appreciate it. And that is a true statement. Matt does have a wonderful amount of knowledge in this field, and it's very useful for all of us, thankfully.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate that. I'll cover the next one. So the next one's from Enduro Rider. It's titled Mineral Knowledge. I can't thank you enough for producing the highest quality podcast as it relates to mineral ownership. Although I have worked in this space for several years now, I find myself learning something new from every episode. The content you provide is second to none in the mineral space. I often listen to the podcast without distractions because I don't want to miss anything, as they are packed full with important details. The mineral owners of this country owe you a great thanks for your efforts to educate us from the most basic foundations of mineral ownership to the highly complex technical situations that can occur. So thank you, Enduro Rider. That very kind words. We greatly appreciate it.
All right. Our next one here is from Catherine Mari. Fantastic podcast. Matt and Justin do a great job providing reliable and relevant information to mineral royalty owners. Each podcast episode is organized and full of understandable information. This is a great service to mineral royalty owners. We cannot thank you all enough. I can't imagine the time that goes into each and every episode. They are well produced too. Thank you. And thank you, Catherine. We appreciate it. Great to know that it does a service.
And thanks for noticing the production quality. That's something I do strive to make sure is top-notch so that you're not distracted by noise or any sort of bad audio quality. So we appreciate that. And I'll send the thanks over to my son, too, who's my part-time audio engineer and helps me with some of the editing as well. So, and then the last one here is from Carlos Danger, NYC. Great podcast. Thank you so much for this podcast. I inherited mineral rights and had no clue about this unique and interesting industry until now. So thank you, Carlos. We appreciate you listening, and thanks for sending in the review. So as always, you know, as we remind people, this is really the one way that you can help us out, you know, going in, taking 1 minute to leave us a quick rating and review on Apple Podcasts raises us in the ranks, and those that are searching for information on oil and gas or mineral rights and royalties and need to hear this, there'll be a better chance they come across it, and it'll help them as well. So thank you in advance for your help in doing that. So, Justin, do you want to dive into the first story?
All right, let's do it. So, Texas royalty owners have overpaid property taxes. Major new appellate decision. So, royalty owners in Texas are taxed annually based on the value of their mineral interest. Frequently, their interests are joined with other royalty owners' interest in a practice called pooling. Pooling provisions in oil and gas leases are useful tools. Pooling clauses in conjunction with unitization agreements allow leases to combine acreage covered by two or more leases to create a single production unit over a common reservoir, often called a unitized tract. This helps prevent waste, preserve minerals, and protect the rights of landowners over a common reservoir. However, pooling provisions can expose a lessor to taxes from multiple counties. So, you know, this is an interesting one, Matt, and I'm sure this is not the first time that royalty owners in Texas have overpaid, but at least they're addressing it.
Yeah, it's probably not the first time. And, you know, I imagine with the amount of oil and gas production in Texas, that this is probably not an uncommon issue. In fact, we were talking before we hit record, I have some minerals in Reeves County, Texas, that are right on the county border. And I was thinking, wow, this is something I need to really pay attention to as far as making sure that we're not getting hit by this. In this case, I don't think the spacing unit doesn't cross the county lines, but it could in the future if additional wells are drilled. And this article talks specifically about landowners in Shelby County, Texas, that had minerals and surface, I believe, right on the county line with St. Augustine County. The pooled unit was kind of covering both counties where the wells were located. The thing that made the court decide in these surface and mineral owners' favor was the fact that the lease prevented cross-conveyancing, and that is that a cross-conveyance is where all parties in a pooling agreement own an undivided interest in that pooling unit, and so you're cross-conveying your interest to the other owners in that pooling unit. And so that is a pooling provision that is something to be aware of, and probably something when you're signing a new lease to have that language in there that would prevent cross-conveyancing, because this is, I think, what helped these royalty owners out from having to pay taxes in St. Augustine County as well. They paid taxes only in Shelby County. St. Augustine had basically come after them. The appraisal district said that because they had signed the division order and accepted royalty payments, that they were subject to that pooling agreement and therefore had effectively cross-conveyed their interest by accepting those royalty payments. The court actually said, quote, "No Texas statute provides for taxation of minerals outside the boundaries of the taxing unit merely by virtue of the fact that they are included in a production unit pursuant to a pooling agreement." So the court basically said that because they signed the division order and accepted those royalty payments did not override the written oil and gas lease. And so those terms and provisions overrode that cross conveyance and they didn't have to pay taxes in St. Augustine County. So definitely helped their tax bill. You know, it is possible, I think, if you did have a lease that did allow cross conveying, that potentially you could be on the hook for taxes in multiple counties. But it's something definitely to be aware of if you own property on the edge of a county or near a county line. So I think that was the one story this month, Justin, that went in the favor of mineral and royalty owners. And we'll talk about the next two here in a second.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, that story just speaks to, again, the importance of having a good lease and having somebody to help you with that lease who stays abreast of all the changes that are happening.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think having a good lease is key. And, you know, having a good attorney to help you negotiate that lease, it really is where you get there. So we'll move on to the next story here. And this was a big surprise to me. And I know the person in question here. A Texas fund manager admits defrauding investors in a 1,361-word email to them. Quote, "No matter where I end up, I want to live a life I'm not ashamed of anymore," he told Bloomberg. Quote, "The boss of a small Texas-based investment firm said he closed the business and called in federal investigators after admitting to fraudulent actions that led to the loss of almost all the money under management. Chris Bentley, founder and chief executive officer of spring-based Bellatorum Resources LLC, said in a telephone interview Thursday with Bloomberg that he's working with the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation and Department of Justice. While Bellatorum is a relative minnow in the investment world, having raised $31 million for its most recently active funds, the nature and apparent candor of Bentley's confession is startling." And I would say that it's startling to say the least. What do you think, Justin?
The only word I can think of is just wow. You know, what a shame to hear. And, you know, I wonder how many times he proofread that 1,361-word email before hitting send.
Boy, that must have been a hard email to send. But I'd have to say, you know, good on him for owning up to his mistakes and taking ownership of it and trying to pay back investors. You know, this is very small scale version of the Ponzi scheme that Bernie Madoff perpetrated, and that was in the news recently with his death here just a month or so ago. And unfortunately for Bentley's case, I do think that he is going to spend quite a bit of time in prison. I think he sort of admitted to that and said that he wanted to do everything in his power before he went to prison to help the investors recoup as much of their money as possible. You know, I don't know Chris Bentley personally, but I am connected with him on LinkedIn. I did see You know, he was a very active poster on LinkedIn, you know, talking about the funds that he was raising in their business. And it seemed very much above board. You know, I knew a couple of the other people that worked at that company, just, you know, again, connections through LinkedIn and the industry. I have not done business with them or didn't know them personally, but it was definitely surprising because, you know, usually you see these articles and you don't really recognize any of the names. But in this case, I did recognize Chris Bentley's name. Now, I think what happened here, and he sort of alluded to this, and they talk about it in the article, is that they targeted mineral acquisitions in Texas shale basins, and they started around 2017 or 2018, and I think they started out initially having some success, and they had one large, I guess, investor on this first fund, and they got decent returns for them. So, hey, let's scale this up. Let's go raise capital. And he was there. I think they were more focused on raising capital than the deal flow side of things and getting quality assets at a good price. And so what he said was they ended up overpaying for assets, making deals that were less than arm's length, is what the article said. And that affected the fund performance. And then to hide that performance or lack thereof from the investors, he hid that information from the stakeholders. And then he tried to raise another $100 million last year, and they only ended up raising a couple million out of that. And he said, which most of went to overhead. So he said he sold his house, personal assets, you know, everything to cover overhead and to try to work it in the end. And quote, this was what he said in the email: I sacrificed everything, family, friendships, and capital, because I believed I could make everything right in the end. And so I think he just got in over his head and was caught up in this shale boom, and everybody was extremely bullish on oil and gas, and then the market turned. It's tough when you have a super competitive environment like he was faced with in Texas and probably in the Permian. I think a lot of this stuff that they were targeting was in the Permian, where there's just a ton of competition. So very difficult to make those consistent returns unless you have a consistent source of quality deals at a good price. And it sounds like that wasn't the case here. So unfortunate into this story, and hopefully that he is able to recoup some of the money for those investors that lost that $31 million. So.
Absolutely. And like you said, Matt, the silver lining is that at least he did get out there and admit his wrongdoing and trying to do everything he can to make it right. And I'm sure this will be something that won't be behind him for quite a while. All right. So our next story here, gotta have it. So first 100 days, Biden turns to Congress to carry out climate clean energy push. So U.S. President Joe Biden's first 100 days in office brought a flurry of executive actions involving climate change and energy policy. But many pieces of Biden's climate agenda, including key parts of his 10-year, $2 trillion infrastructure-focused American jobs plans, boy, that's a mouthful, will require approval from Congress, where partisan divides and parliamentary procedures could determine the fate of those proposals. So the article goes on to say that Democratic leaders of the U.S. House of Representatives Energy and Commerce Committee introduced a major climate bill in March that included a Clean Energy Standard, or CES, aligning with Biden's goal for a carbon-free power sector by 2035. Lawmakers have also introduced measures to extend clean energy tax credits, ease infrastructure permitting, and support carbon capture, utilization, and storage. But legislation promising a carbon tax looks less hopeful, with Biden not promoting the concept in his infrastructure plan, and moderate Democratic Senator Joe Manchin opposed to a price on carbon. We will link the article in the show notes, which provides a really good summary of the key climate or energy bills that have been introduced so far. Matt and I were speaking about this, but the most noticeable for mineral rights and royalty owners is the potential elimination of the percentage depletion deduction and the ability for working interest owners to expense intangible drilling costs. And this is something that we've talked about kind of ad nauseum, but it's just so impactful for mineral royalty owners and everybody. So Kevin Book here, managing director of the independent research firm Clearview Energy Partners, said in particular, percentage depletion and intangible drilling costs expensing are really high priorities for producers operating in a lot of fossil fuel energy states. And so it's not obvious to me that the payout will be big enough. And so, Matt, you know, I think this is going to affect everybody throughout the chain, all the way down to the individual mineral rights and royalty owners and the operators.
Yeah, it's a huge hit. And I don't think that they realize the impact this is going to have on the millions of royalty owners across the country. The percentage depletion by law is restricted to certain taxpayers classified as independent producers or royalty owners that can claim it on a limited volume of oil and gas production each year. So it's not like this is on the 10 million barrels of oil that we're producing in the U.S. that we're targeting those large producers that are profiting and as the operators. You're actually going after the small mom and pop independent producers that only produced, you know, in the thousands of barrels a year, and the royalty owners that receive small royalty checks. So the grandmother who gets, you know, a couple hundred dollars a month to supplement her Social Security income. And those people, I think that the administration thinks that they're out to help. But in fact, by proposing legislation to eliminate percentage depletion and the intangible drilling cost expensing, it's actually going to hurt a lot of everyday Americans. So that's something I think that we need to really speak up and let the administration know. I am going to find a form letter that we could send to our representatives and senators to let them know that this is going to affect you. And so we'll, as soon as I get that, I'll post it on the show notes here, which you can find as always at mineralrightspodcast.com. Just look for the May 2021 news episode and we'll have a link there. But, you know, no matter what, we need to let people know how this is going to affect us as royalty owners. You know, this is a big hit. And, you know, I think the intent was that they're trying to get rid of quote unquote subsidies for fossil fuels and try to accelerate the transition to clean energy. But this is definitely not the way to do it. You know, I think that some of the other legislation being proposed around putting a price on carbon, trying to stimulate more carbon capture, utilization and storage, which we've covered in the previous episodes here this year, really in depth, trying to cover for you just as far as what those technologies are, what are the pros and cons, and why they could actually be beneficial for mineral and royalty owners to the extent that they might actually help operators boost production in some of these conventional plays that are good candidates for enhanced oil recovery. So end of the day, I think this infrastructure plan or these bills that are, you know, sort of layered upon each other, I think there's going to be strong pushback, certainly from Republicans. You mentioned Senator Joe Manchin, who's a moderate Democrat, who's, you know, I think a little bit more on the fence as far as, you know, putting a price on carbon and then some of these tax increases. And so, you know, this is something I think we do need to step up. Now's the time. We need to let our voices be heard. One way that you can do that is by joining the National Association of Royalty Owners, or NARO. I'm on the board of that organization. I'm the chapter president for Colorado. And we have a political action committee that, by paying dues to that organization, you're helping spread the word in Washington to our representatives as far as how some of these legislations are going to affect us as mineral and royalty owners. So that's your avenue to have a voice, a louder voice with the current administration, with any administration. And so I think, you know, definitely something where you want to write to your representative and your senator, you know, let them know how this is going to impact you. And so that this particular aspect of the energy tax incentives and fossil fuel targeted tax legislation, so we can stop that in its tracks and prevent that. I think some of the other stuff they're looking at could be good in the long run. You know, if our goal is really to reduce carbon emissions, it's going to come from the demand side and making sure that we reduce consumption. You know, getting the grid, you know, in a reliable way through nuclear, you know, maybe wind and solar, and then storage for those unreliable sources of energy, so that as we transition the grid to a more clean source of energy, that there's still reliability and it's not fragile and going to be prone to frequent blackouts. Now, as far as the, you know, targeting producers, you know, that's more on the corporate tax side. I think this is the absolute wrong way to go about trying to limit oil and gas consumption and production is by targeting the people that are the property owners in the U.S. that basically this is our way to depreciate the asset. We have a depleting asset that is the minerals and royalties below the ground. As we produce them, they're taken away. They're no longer there. Instead of allowing somebody, you know, like if you had a rental property, you're allowed to depreciate that property over time because of the wear and tear and all of that. And so you get some sort of tax benefit from that depreciation. Well, the depletion allowance is basically just depreciation for the production of oil and gas from your asset because it's not going to be there in the future. So you should have some sort of a tax benefit for that depleting asset. So that's all it is. It's a small percentage, 15% of the gross revenue from royalties. So it's not a huge amount of tax, you know, so I think it's really going in the wrong direction. Again, if you want to learn more about taxes on mineral rights and royalties, we covered that in a lot more detail in episode 20. We'll link to that in the show notes so you can find out more about the cost depletion, the percentage depletion allowances, and then we have links to the IRS tax code where you can read more about it. But yeah, some troubling stuff brewing in Washington right now, Justin.
You nailed it. And I'm super glad you brought up the real estate because I think this is something that people think is totally unique to the oil and gas industry. And depletion is something and it's pretty standard across the board for businesses, real estate, as you mentioned, and other facets as well.
Yeah. And it's even higher, right? So you have straight line depreciation. I think it's maybe, 5 years that you're able to depreciate that. So you get, 20% per year. And we're talking, 15% with royalties. So I think it's, if anything, it should be increased if you're going to ask me, but I know that wouldn't fly right now. But you know, something we got to stand up again and let our voices be heard. So again, I'll try to drum up a form letter or a website that we could link to that you can write your congressmen and your senators to let them know how you feel. On that note, unfortunately, we have to wrap up this month's news episode. Hopefully, we'll have some more positive stories and or an update on this tax legislation, and hopefully, we can stop it in its tracks here. Some of the other stuff is potentially good in aiding the transition, but this is definitely not one of the ways to do it. All right. Well, thanks again for listening. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks so much for listening to the Mineral Rights Podcast with your host, Matt Sands. Don't forget to subscribe and share at mineralrightspodcast.com. The Mineral Rights Podcast should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy.